You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley Davidson North. I-29 in Tiffany Springs or online at WorthHarleyDavidson.com for new and used bikes. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
Jack Nicklaus has looked over this birdie opportunity from about 18 feet. This is for sole possession of the lead. Maybe. Yes, sir!
So Mize and Norman now come to the 11th green.
How's that look?
For sole possession of the show, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Hoping to do some courageous sports talk radio here today. Am I the only one that heard courageous golf and went,
Yeah.
It's poetic. I mean, I would give you that. It's not what you expect to hear, right?
Man.
So from that standpoint, I guess it's poetic.
The only time I can think of that would have been Ben Hogan after an auto accident coming back and winning the U.S. Open. But most of the time,
Tiger, limping around on a bum knee at the U.S. Open?
Yeah, Phil Mickelson with his wife.
Wasn't that the same year he played the extra round?
I think so. 05 or something like that.
Yeah.
Not 05.
Phil Mickelson's wife battling cancer.
Yeah.
Well, so
there's
a
few.
You could have. Do we know what that cut is from?
I don't remember exactly what it was.
Okay. All right.
There was just a video stream that had a bunch of calls, and I just kind of ran them together and figured that people who really, really follow the Masters will know what that cut was from.
Yeah, a guy hit a ball near one of the streams at Augusta, and there was a snake crawling around. This is a very courageous golf.
Courageous golf.
No, it's not at all.
I have no idea what it's
from.
Look
at all the drunken spectators right next to him as he fires this next shot.
Like an alligator. Like every now and then you see some of those courses down in Florida where there's an alligator coming out. If you play through with the gator right there on the green, that's courageous golf.
Johnson eyeing his shot.
By the way, how pissed are the golfers?
Oh, my God. He's just been eaten by an alligator. We now go to Ken Venturi on 16.
Thank you, Jeff. That wasn't courageous golf. That was stupid golf, Jim.
Bill Johnson is now out of the Masters, having been eaten by a gator. We now go to Ken Venturi on 17.
What?
Isn't that the whole whole premise behind Happy Gilmore?
Yes.
Carl Weathers lost his hand to an alligator while playing golf. Isn't that the deal? Chubbs McPhee or what's his name?
Yeah, you got it. You're all over it.
Isn't that what it is, Chubbs McPhee?
Yes. I don't know what his last name is, but his name is definitely Chubbs, and he lost his hand to an alligator.
Chubbs McPhee.
Well, so you remember the gator that got your hand? I got his head.
Yeah. That's courageous golf.
One of the classics.
Chubbs McGee.
Golf fans, yeah. What is it?
Chubbs McGee.
I was in the ballpark. I was pretty close. For me, we're gonna go ahead and score to win. As bad as I usually am. All right. We will have updates on the Masters throughout. Curtis, why don't you give us the leaderboard right now as we stand?
I can't. I don't have one ready. I've been too busy trying to be funny.
I knew you wouldn't have it ready. You'll have it ready in a moment. It's just search Masters leaderboard, and there's a link, the top link.
Looks like there's three golfers tied at 3 under. Matsuyama, Harmon, and Leishman. Three people I've never heard of.
You didn't want to go to the two guys tied at 4?
Simpson and Zalatoris tied at 2 under.
I'd like to point out that clearly the leaderboard does not give first names.
No, I'm looking on the TV. I just see the five names that are up there in the scorebox.
We're not, you know, you're going to have to help us out on some of these first names. All of a sudden, Curtis morphs into being Johnny Most. the little fellers.
Lefty,
two strokes.
Guy with the white hat. White hat guy. I'm having a hard time with the names here.
Yeah. Pinky, guy wearing the pink hat. Didn't Kepka wearing a pink hat today, I think.
Probably.
He had a whole pink, like when he was warming up, he had a pink. I was watching. You'll be shocked, but I watched the majors. He had a whole, you know, he looked like, you know who he looked like, don't you?
Mm.
Wearing a pink, big old pink shirt. Corey Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody rocks the bright colors like Corey Anderson.
But was the collar popped, and was there a second white polo under it?
Collar was popped, and there was this gray thing, charcoal thing he's wearing now that was underneath it. But it perfectly matched the hat, perfectly. Like they were the same material, hat and pullover. So I digress. Listen, we've got a lot coming your way. Not all of it, this kind of hard-hitting, in-depth analysis of the Masters, but we will keep you up to date on what is going on with the Masters throughout the course of the day. We'll keep you up to date with what's going on in Major League Baseball. Jeff Passan, he's our Major League Baseball insider, ESPN senior baseball insider. You know, isn't it amazing that he's already reached the rank of senior baseball insider at ESPN? Yet he's not even the senior insider here at the program. I want to point that out. I want to point that out. You know,
I think it's interesting. He is wise for his years.
Absolutely. Stump the Chump's coming up at 3:00. We'll give you a chance to win that great Cajun food from Jazz, the Louisiana Kitchen. Peter Yatinik will be here. I've even got some Masters questions.
Strong.
How about that?
How about who was the golfer on when the call was? Courageous.
Courageous golf.
Who is the courageous
golfer? Did you look
golfer?
It up?
I didn't. I was trying to find the leaderboard. I have it now, though. I have the actual five first and last names of the people who are at the top, if you'd like that.
Okay, let's give it a go.
Mark Leishman is now in the lead at 4-under. Two-way tie for second, Brian Harman of the U.S. and Hideki Matsuyama, both 3-under. And then Will Zalatoris and Webb Simpson are 2-under.
Okay. I don't even have a good golf joke.
Dustin Johnson, 1-under. I'm just looking for notables. Phil Mickelson, 1-under. Jordan Spieth, 1-under.
Where's Kepka? He was kind of all over the place. He wasn't having much of a day.
Let's see. Ooh, yeah, I'm going down. I'm not finding him at the moment. Bryson DeChambeau, even. He's only through three holes, though.
Is Matsuyama not the one who hit the drive and it hit the green and just rolled and rolled and rolled and rolled right over into the pond?
He hit
an iron. God, there's somebody they're talking. I was reading. I actually did prep a little bit for the Masters about how like the 20 under for Dustin Johnson is always going to be like an asterisk next year because of it being fall and wet and, you know, the greens weren't like they were. But this year may be like the fastest and hardest greens ever because they haven't had any rain down there. And so it's going to be go from 20 under with Dustin Johnson 5 months later, the champion, 2 under.
You just tapped that 4-foot birdie putt and it went clear into the water.
It went clear to Florida. I don't know what happened.
Brooks Koepka, 2-over. Tied for 43rd right now.
1 month after knee surgery that they said would keep him out for 6 months. So think about that.
Courageous.
Is that courageous golf? Thank you.
We butted heads there trying to go for that joke.
Courageous golf. That's what's being played there. Courageous golf. All right, let's talk a little baseball before we get Jeff Passan in here in the program. Royals, as we mentioned yesterday, the game wrapping up while we were on the air, 4-2, they lose. I want to give you a little flavor of Mike Matheny this morning. One of the things that I think is going to be interesting about this team is the bullpen. It doesn't have to become an HDH situation, right, that you've got these, you know, perfectly defined roles that set up where – you've got a seventh inning guy, an eighth inning guy, and a ninth inning guy. And by the way, you know, the HDH oftentimes during the regular season, it didn't work that way because guys had days off. It's when you get into the postseason and you have extra days off and you're willing to stretch guys that you get to a point that, okay, seventh inning, Herrera, eighth inning, Davis, ninth inning, Holland. I don't know that they'll ever get there, but what would be your vision for the bullpen? If you were going to have an HDH, what is the HDH? who's your seventh, eighth, ninth? If you just said, listen, this is how we do it. I want to sign roles. Who would you go with in this bullpen that's 7, 8, 9? And work backwards if you want. Give me 9, 8, seven.
I mean, I'd like to think that at least two of the guys who were in the original HDH would be in the running for that, but I don't know that that's the case. Zimmer. Stamont. Based on what I've seen, there's about eight guys I could. I don't have a favorite HDH right now.
I would say that if you were gonna put, if you said, if are we doing it based on who's ready? I think here's one of the things that's interesting. I'm gonna play Mike Matheny from this morning when we had a Zoom with him, him talking about the ninth inning, and because I think it's interesting. But I wanted to set this up. I'm with you, Kay. It's hard. Who's that guy? Like, I heard some questioning about, like, well, Holland should have walked Jose Ramirez. Hey, Jose Ramirez is a good player. He's a really good player. Trust me, I've had him on my fantasy team for a couple of years now. He's a tremendous player. Yes, he had gotten you earlier in the game, but I don't know that means, you know, if Greg Holland's your guy, I likewise was just hearing yesterday morning that Greg Holland's the guy. Well, if he's the guy, is the guy going to pitch around somebody? And if your answer is sure, then I don't think he's the guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's my point. And I do think when you watch what he's doing, there's a lot of things going on here in the ninth inning, just to preface for people, going on in the late innings. One, they're trying to get everybody work. You know, David Leske, who we'll talk to tomorrow, had a great piece. He said, I'm not that worried about Holland. Holland needs regular work. Right? Like, he's not sharp on his slider. He said his secondary pitches looked like they had life in his inside the crown column for today. He said, you know, his secondary pitches looked like they had life. I tend to agree. He said he's just the slider, you know, isn't as sharp. And he said he needs that. He needs work to keep that sharp. I hope he's right. I also don't think Holland is what Greg Holland was. I think he'd be the first guy to tell you that. And I think you see a lot of 80-somethings on his pitches. You know, there's not the 98, 96, and then the 80-something, 95, 98, 98, 99, 80-something. There's a lot of 80-somethings coming up there. He's not what he used to be. And so I bring this up. Just play along. Give me your HDH, right? If you're at home, think of this bullpen right now. If you're a baseball fan, if you're a casual fan, don't worry about it. Don't pull a muscle trying to figure it out because we'll walk you through it. My point is this. I don't think you can come up with it. Right, I don't think you could, like, tell me what it'll be at the end of the year. I've got a better shot at that.
Yeah,
I've got a better shot at what I think it'll be at the end of the year, and it doesn't have H or D in it. Right, I think if H and D, Holland and Davis, are part of what becomes a lights out 7, 8, 9, then I think something's gone wrong because they don't have the stuff. I don't think it will be a lights out 7, 8, 9. I'd love to see it. It'd be great to go down memory lane, but they're not what they used to be. Not that they can't still be effective relievers for this team. If it were going to come together, realistically, based upon the bullets that these guys are actually firing, I think it would probably be something like Zimmer, Stamont, Barlow.
There you go.
Zimmer, Barlow, Stamont. I think that's what you're looking at. Although I don't know that, I still think there's a little more nastiness to the pitches of Barlow than there is Stamont. So I think Stamont's got the higher top end velocity, but I think the better repertoire and ability to go be Wade Davis dominant, where he was. I saw somebody wrote a story. They called it the lineal closer champion, and then they did it like a heavyweight championship. And who would be the champ until somebody knocked him off? Not like they lost it in a game, you know, because they had a save blown. Just like, this guy's the champ. Like Mariano Rivera, you know, wasn't the champ for 14 years. He was the champ for like 3 years. Then it was somebody else who was you know, Greg Gagne, you know, was it for like a couple of years. Then it was back to Rivera for a couple of years. And Wade Davis had it for 2 years. Yeah. It's a really interesting article. It's just a cool way to kind of look at, you know, the closers. And his point was, other than Mariano Rivera, guys have like their 2 year dominance, but that's it. You know, that for the most part, guys don't make, you know, 2 or 3 years at the top of that food chain is about all you got. And then you blow out. And Mariano Rivera is the only guy that kind of bucked that trend. Trevor Hoffman, who reinvented himself from a power guy to a slap guy. I bring it up just because I heard a little bit of grumbling around and saw on Twitter, like somehow the loss yesterday was on Matheny. No. That's the exercise here. Well, what should your, you know, HDH have been? Do you have one right now? I don't think so. Because you've got a lack of usage. You're trying to get everybody innings and pitches. Like I mentioned David Leske pointing out that Holland's not sharp. But so what are you going to do? How do you get him sharp? Not pitch him? Mm-hmm. Walk around guys, pitch around guys and walk them. So the answer could be yes. My point to this is just I don't think there's a definitive this is how it should be done. Right?
Yep.
And so I wanted to try to get a feel for where Matheny's going with it. So I asked him this morning, you know, I said, look, I'm not second guessing. This has nothing to do with the guys that have been pitched so far, but looking ahead, I said, you know, do you have something in mind that you want to get to? Are you looking for just a ninth inning guy?
I just think that happens organically. We give guys opportunities and give them chances. And I still really think, and the guys are buying into it too, at least they tell me they are, that, hey, this is the section of the lineup. This is the segment of the game. And we tell them early on, this is where we think you fit best, and here's why. And then, you know, we're open for some rebuttal there, too. And but just taking the data that we have, whether they're individual matchups, which there's always such a small sample size with that. But there is some psychology there. If a guy's beat you up in the past, that guy knows it and you know it. And so we take that into account. But for the most part, there's certain guys that we trust in certain leverage spots, and that leverage spot could truly be the sixth, and we've had that happen already. We're coming across the middle part of their lineup and we are up against a wall. We believe we have starter on the ropes, and their bullpen might be really strong, and this is our shot where we've got to shut these guys down. So I mean, trying to take all those things into consideration and then just putting guys in those spots to where they can be most successful. And you know, we talked about this last year, going in with the exact same mindset, and all of a sudden, you know, some guys kind of separated themselves, say, hey, get me to the ball, give me the ball in the ninth, and we believe it's going to be a done deal. Trevor Rosenthal did that, and thought Greg did a nice job with that too, but Greg's also been able to be versatile, to be able to come get a guy out of an inning and then pitch another one. And once again, I believe the game is evolving to where we're taking really taken very seriously that any of these innings could end up being the one that's most important in the game. But and you guys know this well, there is a separate psychology about throwing the ninth inning. And so we put different guys in that spot and we see how it looks. We learn and move forward. But long answer for you, Soren. But I want to tell you, I do know that, you know, if we ever got to that point where we had three guys that were lights out against lefties and righties, and we could throw them in there and just know you, then you, then you, then stand back and just watch and clap and give high fives after, we'd love that. But I think it's going to take a little while if and when we find.
All right. I believe that answer to be 99% perfect, right? He mentioned it being a long answer, mm-hmm. right? But I think it was 99% perfect. Because I think he hit on everything. He acknowledged that the ninth inning's different. He acknowledged that he understands leverage. We know he went through a big study session after the Cardinals, and maybe even during his time, but we know he talked about doing a deep dive into the analytics, and he covered that knowledge of it. He covered his knowledge of playing the game, being a catcher behind the dish, that the ninth inning is different. 99% perfect answer about the bullpen, where we are here. You may not like it because he didn't say it's this guy to this guy to this guy, but it's actually a perfect answer by Mike Matheny. Perfect answer by Mike Matheny. 99% perfect. What's the 1% that's wrong?
That it's organic?
No.
Okay.
No. My name's not Soren.
Oh,
it's Soren. That's the 1%.
Okay.
Which brings me to my second point.
I thought there was
which brings me to my second point. I give it only 1% value in that answer.
I get you.
Which brings me to my second point, which is I hope nobody tells him how long will it be before he gets my name right. and I think people have proven over the years I don't care.
Yeah, right.
It does not bother me at all.
Yes.
Right. But I actually am more intrigued by it. Like people we have on all the time. That don't get it right. I love it. I think it's fantastic. Let's put an over under date. Where do you think it is? I worry about since I'm bringing it up now, I'm exposing it, and somebody might go say something to him. I hope not. But where do you think it'll be?
Not this season.
Okay. We're more than a year in.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's going to take I think it's going to be into next year.
I think it'll be like, yeah, next spring training. I'll put it in, you know, end of next spring
training. If you get to go out there and stand, you know, in Arizona and chat him up, he might get that. But I don't think I did that
last year. Keep that in mind.
That was our
part of spring training in.
That's why I'm almost more inclined to think that he's just – not that he's not going to get it, is that he's just one of the people who are inclined to not say your name properly. They're going to just call you Soren for whatever reason. I hear you on ESPN radio every time with the same people, and the guy goes, we bring in Soren Petro. There's no way in hell the guy doesn't know how to say Soren. It's impossible, but he just calls you Soren. It's like why when I joke with you and I call you Sven or say, Sven Petru.
Right. Oh, when I go on with Dari and Mel, they'll call fairly semi-regular. I don't act like I'm on there every week, you know, two or three times a year. I've been on there a number of times that they remember different things. Like they remember one time I told the producer, and they told him, I said, listen, I can do it, but if you could have me out by this time because I got to go coach basketball. And so they remember that part of it. They're like, you don't got a basketball game today, do you?
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't have a basketball game, guys.
What's odd though is it isn't like you have a common name, a commonly spelled name with a different pronunciation. You know, everyone's so used to saying it that way. How used to is anybody to saying Soren? I mean, there's only two possibilities. You don't have to break yourself of a lifelong habit.
I think what it is they hear it and they're like, how's it spelled? And so somebody spells it to them properly, S-O-R-E-N, and so the S-O-R is always sore.
Or it's either sorority. Used to Sorensen.
If they would not ask how it's spelled, I think they would be better. But, again, I don't care. It doesn't matter. I appreciate the thoughtful answer.
Appreciate the thoughtful answer by Mike Matheny.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we'll take a break. Jeff Passan will join us next to complain about something. I have no doubt he's next in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
I think that's probably the weirdest voice I've ever heard in my life.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Husband, father, Elmo impersonator. He wrote The Arm and is currently writing its follow-up, The Leg. He has everyone's phone number, even yours. He's MLB insider Jeff Passan of ESPN, only on The Program.
Jeff Passan of ESPN is brought to you by Victory Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram at the Legends Auto Plaza on the southeast corner of 435 and Parallel, or online at victorymotorskc.com, where our first price is better than their last.
We talk Major League Baseball with ESPN Senior Baseball Insider. It is Jeff Passan. He's with us on our T-Mobile guest line, the largest, the fastest 5G network. That's T-Mobile. Jeff, how are you, sir?
Excellent, Soren. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Let me ask you a question. Are there any surprises? I always like to just delve into your mind. Are there any surprises so far on this baseball season as far as you're concerned?
Are you talking Royals specifically or just generally speaking?
Baseball in general, but let's ask it both ways. Royals, surprise. MLB, surprise.
I think Nicky Lopez has been a nice surprise for the Royals, hitting over 400 so far. And remember, he was supposed to start off at the alternate site, but Mondesi gets hurt, and they're not bringing Bobby Witt up yet, so they need a shortstop, and Nicky Lopez has filled in very admirably there. I thought Danny Duffy's first start was absolutely fantastic. Listen, there's not going to be the expectation that Danny Duffy's going to go and throw six shutout every time he's out there. It's unrealistic, but if he's your number four starter and he's going out there and has the kind of stuff that he did, I'm not going to say the Royals are a playoff team with him pitching like that, but they are a much more competitive team that way. And it was really nice to see him. You know, he's had his ups and downs, and seeing him show up like that for the first game was great. The Oakland A's have been awful, and I had them winning the American League West Division. I still believe in them, but starting off 1-6, and not just 1-6, but 1-6 with a negative 36 run differential, not great. Philadelphia Phillies, on the other hand, I've been about as bearish as you can get on the Phillies. I just thought, you know, they returned the same team as last year. I understand that they got Sam Coonrod and Jose Alvarado and Archie Bradley to shore up their bullpen. I didn't feel like that was enough, but, you know, 5-1 is 5-1, and that bullpen has been very good so far. So I think the Phillies have been a nice surprise.
What is we'll come back. Let's save the Royals. Let's start with the Phillies, because, you know, we had Eitan Shander on the drill, and I said, hey, you know, expectations. He's like, yeah, kind of the same team as last year. And I'm like, well, how much money you got to spend before there's some expectations in Philadelphia, right? Am I? And I hear what you're saying. Your point isn't that, like, you know, they shouldn't be better. Your point is just like, listen, they didn't really add enough to think that they would be appreciably better. But, like, shouldn't it with the money? When you lay out and go get Bryce Harper, that's not a move so that 6 years from now you can be good. That's supposed to be a finishing piece, isn't it?
That's 100% correct. And then you re-sign JT Realmuto and you add Alec Bohm from inside the farm system last year. Like, there are some pieces there, but they are going to go as far as their pitching takes them. And their pitching, especially at the top of that rotation, with Aaron Nola, who might be the most underappreciated starting pitcher in the big leagues. You know, I was doing this drill with Jesse Rogers, the great writer at ESPN.com, who's looking at it was with Kylie McDaniel, another great writer at ESPN, who's doing a story right now on aces in baseball. Let me ask you this, Seren. How many aces are there in Major League Baseball right now?
Oh, you know, my number is always much lower. I mean, number one.
No, mine is. Dude, mine is too. Like, for me to be a genuine number one, to be an ace, it's not just the guy who starts opening day for you. If you're an ace, you have been excellent for multiple years. And to me, there are two clear aces in baseball right now. And you can argue that Max Scherzer is the third. It's Jacob DeGrom and Garrett Cole. If you want to throw Scherzer in, fine. Justin Verlander, when he's healthy, sure. But beyond that,
Can I nominate a couple more? I'm in the same spot you are, and I didn't like Scherzer. I think Scherzer might be on the downslope, which maybe we'll get to one of the other things I want to discuss with you about these contracts that are going around. But you know, I think Zach Greinke's still up there. If you want to say he's too flaky to be the guy, fine. I'm not going to argue. And I think Trevor Bauer might be up there.
Yeah, Bauer could be up there too. I mean, his double digit strikeout games in his first two. Coming off that Cy Young, he looked really good. I think Shane Bieber's in the conversation too. We saw him yesterday. I mean, his stuff is dirty, and he's got maybe the best command for somebody who's got that dominant stuff. To me, Greinke, the stuff it's fastball is 89 to 91 now. You know, it's just not – he's a brilliant baseball mind and a brilliant pitcher. And I think there's going to be a real good case for him to be in the Hall of Fame, which sounds weird, right? But if you look at the numbers, man, they back it up.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I think he's in the Hall of Fame personally. But I'm with you in the sense that he's not going to go overwhelm you. Like, I think he's win a World Series game 3-2, not win a World Series game 1-0, right? But I think he can win 10 games in a row, giving up two runs or less. So that's why I put him up there. But to your point anyway, so I think we're of the same mind. So go ahead to where you were going with it.
I just think that it's hard to find an ace, and it's why you see teams hoard starting pitching the way that they do. It's why when you see the Royals have a guy like Daniel Lynch, who's a 6'6" lefty who's up to 99, you can dream on that. It's why you take Ace Lacy and you're giddy that he dropped to you, because he's a guy who has that type of frontline potential. To be an ace in baseball today, you have to have premium stuff in addition to the command and the control. And there are just so few guys out there. You know, I look, did you see the Twins Brewers game where Corbin Burnes and Jose Barrios were dueling there? Mm-hmm. Like, Corbin Burnes is a guy to me who can jump into that ace tier. He's got 4++ pitches. He's got good command and control, and he punches a lot of guys out. And he's someone I'm looking at who could take that leap.
I think, you know, and so here's where I want to go. What it takes to pay those guys when they get to – end? Like who's, you know, I this is where, you know, we kind of had the debate last week about Mondesi and being a star, right? And like stars mm-hmm. win games, to which I don't disagree, right? Stars win championships. I don't disagree. I think the debate is Mondesi a star? Clearly not now,
right.
but is he going to be, right? That's what we went round and round about last week. Well, I mean, with the pitching, though, we know it's going to get hurt, right? Like these, like one of the things I think that the Royals may be in position to do is, I think the best thing you can do, and this is what the Rays and A's I think do a great job of, is when about the time that they're ready to head out into the free agent dollars is about the time they're about ready to blow up too. And yeah. So I've been amazed for the last 3 years, these mega pitching contracts that have been handed out, and how many of them are going to have, you know, they're going to look like the Pujols contract with 5 or 6 years of just dead money on the back end. Aren't we headed towards that?
Well, I think, no, not necessarily, because I think, listen, I wrote a freaking book on Tommy John. So if I don't know it the best out of everybody in my industry, I'm certainly up there. And I was having this argument with a GM a few days ago about how he looks at Tommy John surgery. And blowing out your elbow is not a rite of passage necessarily, but almost an inevitability with guys. And yet, let's look at the aces that we're talking about, Seren. Gerrit Cole, never been injured. Jacob DeGrom had Tommy John surgery when he was a year into pitching because he was a shortstop in college and just transitioned, but has been very healthy ever since. Shane Bieber, not been hurt. Aaron Nola had a little thing early on in his career, but has gone out there and pitched. Max Scherzer, never been hurt. Justin Verlander, didn't get hurt till he was 37. I mean, you know, the consistency is not just in going in year in and year out and doing it. It's in staying healthy, too. And to find Zach Greinke, never been hurt. Like you look at the guys who are the best, what's the one commonality among them that they have stayed healthy? So if you can find a guy who stays healthy, you have struck gold. And may I transition to another thing, because I'd love to get pick your brain on this. We haven't talked about my idea about how to, I'm not even going to call it save baseball, but to make baseball a much better game, have we?
I don't know. I don't know. What is it? I'll tell you if we've talked about it.
I think it's a very simple fix that sounds too simple to really make a difference, but when you look at all of the consequences of it, it does great things. Limit pitching staffs to 10 or 11 pitchers.
Okay. Which is what the staffs used to look like back in the days, which is what does that get us?
Here's what that gets us, a few things. Number one, you're getting rid of the bullpen carousel that you have, right? Every game you have reliever after reliever coming in. It slows the games down. You have guys coming in, throwing 97 to 100. I mean, look at the Royals bullpen right now. Jake Brents, like my son looked at me a couple days ago. He's like, you see the lefty the Royals have? He's throwing 99. I was like,
hardest,
yes, I have.
Hardest pitch ever by a Royals lefty since the new whatever it's called is in.
Back
no, you're saying
yep.
It would force them to pace themselves, which would take a little bit off, which would actually allow the batter to put the bat on the ball more often.
Bingo.
And would help
Bingo.
The overall health of the game.
Beyond that, on the offensive side, you have more balls that you're going to be able to hit because starting pitchers aren't going to be trying to max themselves out on every pitch, so you're going to have more balls in play. You have a deeper bench. You're like, Jeff, why does the deeper bench matter? A deeper bench matters because now you have room on your roster, Seren, for two Terrence Gores. And if you want to talk about recruiting athletes to baseball and putting them in positions where they can grow and where they can become great baseball players, but in the meantime, you're just going to use their speed. I love stolen bases. I love the idea late in the innings, or late in the game rather, that you put a pinch runner in or that you use a pinch hitter in a particular spot. And right now, the way that benches are constructed, they simply don't have that. So I think there would be an offensive benefit to it, too, just in terms of the excitement of the game. So you have more pitchers who are going deeper into games, and thus you are breeding more aces. You have better offensive outcomes because those pitchers who are in the game right now are not going to be throwing as hard, and because you're not going to be seeing, you know, this parade of relievers at 98 to 100 in the late innings. You have more excitement because of the balls in play as well as what happens when you have more pinch runners on your bench. I just think the benefits of that far outweigh the negatives. And I have trouble, if I'm being honest with you, finding negatives in this situation, unless you're the type of person who looks at velocity as the be-all, end-all, when in reality, if I were to show you without a radar gun a pitch that's at 95 and a pitch that's at 99, you probably couldn't tell the difference.
I think it's a great idea. Yeah. Right now on the surface, I mean, I don't hear the negative behind it, right? I don't know that, you know, you're not just going to blow up every arm you've got because they all are now conditioning themselves to be max guys. Well, it would take an adjustment, right?
Yes, this would be, here's the thing. Further, this would be implemented over a 10-year period, I think. You know, we would go down
every 2 years, drop the max number of pitchers.
Exactly.
Down one.
Exactly. Yeah. But okay. the thing is, the effect that this would have would not just be on the major league level. It would start off in the minor leagues, and then it would go into high schools and into youth baseball, where you would condition players to throw more. And I don't think that that's a bad thing. I'm not talking about putting a youth arm out there for 100 pitches. I still think that the pitch smart rules and regulations that are in play, or recommendations that are in place right now, are good for young arms. But the idea that you're going to teach a kid you can't just go out there throwing like gas for an inning at a time, or go to a showcase and blow someone away at 99 on the radar gun and think that that's, you know, going to write your ticket. No, that's not the point of pitching. The point of pitching needs to be to get outs. And you know what? We would see Seren the return of the sinker. How many sinker ballers are there in baseball these days? Not a whole lot. But the idea of a ground ball out being a valuable thing, hitters would have to change their swings, I think, because they're going to be seeing different sorts of stuff. It's not just going to be forcing fastballs high in the zone and breaking balls meant to generate swings and misses. It's going to be a different mix of pitches. And I think the strategy and the psychology involved there adds a fascinating element to the game, too.
I do love the idea. I always loved it. The one thing I miss with the new extra inning rule is I always liked it when you ran out of position players and your DH had to go play first, and your second baseman had to go play. You pinch it, you went for it, it didn't work, and now you got a second baseman out in right field. I remember a game when I was a kid, Hal McRae happened to come in and play second base in like the 15th inning or something, and I was like, oh, this is great. Let's see how Hal does at second. You know, fish out of water. Come on. So I think that would be great to see. You know, you get Terrence Gore, you pinch run with him, and now it doesn't happen, or they tie it up, and Terrence Gore's got to go play in the field. And let's see what he does, you know, and he's got to play in the infield or something. I think all that stuff, yeah, I like it. We're talking to Jeff Passan here in the program. We played a cut from Mike Matheny this morning about the Royals bullpen, and I thought Matheny had a great answer. It was a very thoughtful answer. He covered the analytics. He covered high leverage. He talked about how the ninth inning was different. What do you see for this bullpen and how it ultimately shapes up? I said if it goes right, Davis and Holland are not part of the back end. I mean, the bullets just are not there with those guys anymore. I hope they have success, and I hope they're crafty and are a real asset to this team. They're mostly there for experience and on-the-field coaching. You know, what do you think of the back of the bullpen and all the guys that they've got that seems to be a great depth of guys that can, you know, finish games or be in high-leverage situations?
I thought from the first time that I saw him that Josh Stomont was going to be the closer of this team. Eventually, that they were working toward that. You know, I look at a guy like Scott Barlow, and he's absolutely got the stuff, and he's got the moxie, and he's got all the things you need, I think, to
the
pitch
hair.
The ninth inning. Yeah, oh, he's got the hair. I mean, he's just so valuable because he can pitch so much, though, right? He is – I almost look – if I'm Mike Matheny, I almost look at it like Stomont is your guy who can come in and just blow guys away with pure stuff. But Barlow's your guy who you can put in the sixth or seventh or eighth in that high leverage situation and really rely upon him. And that's the person that you want to put out those fires. So I think either of those guys can do it. I think Kyle Zimmer's a back-end guy. Jake Brents clearly is going to be someone, because he's the only lefty in your bullpen, who has the ability to come in and get those left-handed guys out. So you're gonna need to use him judiciously. But I think you can also use a guy like Davis throwing the cutter that he does against left-handers. Or if Jake Junis stays in the bullpen, he's someone who can come in and face left-handed pitching too, because the new cutter that he's got. Jesse Hahn stuff seems to have gone backward a little. I don't know if that's going to continue because his stuff was great last year. I mean, Carlos Hernandez clearly has a big arm, and Kyle Zimmer is in the mix too. Like, it's a good bullpen, Seren. It's a good bullpen that they've got right now.
It's a good bullpen, but it has to work itself out, right? And that's one of the things that Dini talked about.
It's a good enough bullpen where you can force guys into situations where you may not have put them in the past and let them win jobs with the realization that if they fail there, it's not like you got nothing to go back them up. I would, you know, if I'm managing that bullpen, I'm trying to get Staumont and Barlow and Zimmer into my late innings. And if I have to use Holland and Davis, then I got to use Holland and Davis. And that's something that, I'm okay living with.
We're talking to Jeff Passan here in the program. Jeff, we got to get to our Final Four here. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If an orthopedic or sports injury puts you on the bench, the same experts that care for the Royals can see you quickly. Request an appointment at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I will start you with this. We joke around about the next book, The Leg. What is the next book you're going to write?
I'm still looking for it. If anyone has any ideas, by all means, send them into the text line, because I started working on the arm in 2004. I don't even know when it was. No, I do know when it was. It was right around the time when my youngest son was born, and he's turning 9 in a couple of weeks. So it's been a long time since I started working on a book, and I just haven't come upon an idea that has inspired me to the point where I'm going to do it yet, but that will come, and when it does, it's going to be awesome.
Who leads the Royals in wins this year?
It's such a fluky, lucky thing. You know, I'm going to say Brady Singer, because I think Brady Singer is the likeliest to go out there and make 33 starts.
Okay, that's a good reason. How many career hits for Adalberto Mondesi when it's all said and done?
What's he at right now?
Right now he sits at 275.
275? I'll go 1,300.
Sounds like a star to me.
Next.
You don't like that one? You don't like that one? Okay. Are you watching the Masters?
No.
No, not a golf guy?
I can be it. I'm a Tiger golf guy. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm a, you know, let's put it this way. If there's a tie going on to the back nine on Sunday, I'll turn it on. Like, I'll watch. If it's close, if there are guys if it's John Rahm and Dustin Johnson, that's about all. No, that's not quite all I can name. But if it's familiar names or a good stretch, then I'll tune in. But I'm not one of those people who sits there and eats, sleeps and breathes golf. I like going out onto the golf course, having a couple of pops, and hoping that there's one shot in the round that I absolutely strike. And there is, like, in sports, I'm not sure that there's a better feeling than a well-struck golf shot. Like, you know, it's like equivalent to when you're playing pickup basketball and you just know you've got your shot that day, or when you're playing baseball and you just make, like, you snap off that perfect curveball. There are just those things in sports that that give you that instant dopamine rush. Hitting a golf shot, though, that you know you absolutely nailed, and watching it fly in the air, that's a magnificent thing.
Jeff Passan, our baseball insider, joins us each and every week. Great stuff, buddy. Thanks for giving us some time on your vacation, man. Get back to the family and relaxing.
I'm off to the beach. See you, buddy.
All right, Jeff Passan from ESPN. We'll take a break. Stuff the Chumps right around the corner. Your chance to win great Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. It's coming your way next hour.
The Program with Soren Petro.
We call it a water cooler show.
Because the next day in the offices, people gather around the water coolers to talk about it.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we'll keep you up to date on the Masters throughout the afternoon. Stump the Chumps coming up next. We'll get you great Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Harmon and Matsuyama at 3-under. Reed at 3-under as well. Zalatoris, Simpson, Busenhout, and Rose. Also, M.
I looked it up.
They're all at 2-under.
It's Bezuidenhout.
Bezuidenhout?
Yeah, Christian Bezuidenhout of South Africa.
Very nice. Our Masters coverage here on Sports Radio 810 WHB is brought to you by Buck Roofing, Edwin Watts Golf Shops, M&M Golf Carts, Xfinity Mobile, and Metcalf CarStar. Are you looking for a tradition unlike any other? When your vehicle needs collision repair, be sure to call Metcalf CarStar, where they have a tradition of making it convenient to get your car back on the road. Metcalf CarStar, relax. They'll take it from here. Jazz. Great Cajun food from Jazz. You can take it from us. Next, you can stump the Chumps. Got a line.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Shell. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, who was the first player to homer from each side of the plate in the same inning? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.